And now, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
I am glad to be able to take a part again in this anniversary celebration. 8 long years ago today, I sent out a call for farmers and farm leaders to come to Washington to help draft farm legislation to meet the emergency. And that meeting led directly to the national farm programs that we now have. Farmers did their work well. Agriculture was almost helpless, as we remember, before the emergencies of 1933. But in September 1939, when another crisis confronted us, the crisis of the Second World War, farming was far better prepared. The reasons for the favorable position of agriculture in the late summer of 1939 are not hard to find. Agriculture probably suffered more than any other industry from the short-sighted national policies that followed the end of the First World War. When the farmers arrived here, in response to my call of March 8, 1933, I found a group eager for action and ready to lay aside minor differences. They knew that there was no time to lose. So, when the Second World War began, a year and a half ago, the farm programs inaugurated in 1933 served as what might be called shock absorbers for agriculture. We had no repetition of the buy-a-bale movement and other ineffective proposals for farm relief that followed that August of 1914 after the outbreak of the First World War. Today, there is no call to plow up the plains. American agriculture is in splendid condition to play its full part in the program of national defense. Our granaries are full. Our stores of food and fiber are adequate to meet our own needs at home. Yes, and the needs of our friends in the other lands now fighting for their existence, fighting in behalf of all democratic forms of government, fighting against world control by dictatorships. The country is glad that there are no bottlenecks in our agricultural production. The farm front is ready for any demand of total defense. It is no accident that the farmers of our country stand ready to serve in the severe trial ahead of us. Their preparedness is the fruit of their own voluntary, concerted efforts, stretching back over all these years. These efforts are embodied in national farm programs conceived by the farmers and administered by the farmers. To me, the story of that achievement is a genuine inspiration. Back there in 1933, farmers balked at the philosophy of fear and inaction. Assisted by their government, they came together and began to work together to solve some of these difficulties. Through their programs, they've raised farm income. They are conserving their soil. They are rehabilitating poverty-stricken farmers. The farm front is a broad one. But national programs for agriculture touch every part of this front in every part of the land. 6 million farmers cooperating in these national programs are helping to give the answer to those who question the future of democracy. I am well aware that these programs have not solved all the farm problems. Out of the war, the present war, have arisen new difficulties and new demands. The post-war world will be different in many ways from the world that we knew before September 1939. But given a sympathetic national administration, farmers can meet these post-war problems as they met the problems of 1933. They can achieve the equality they must have if they are to make their proper contribution to the national defense and to the American way of life. It is the fate of this common life that weighs upon all our hearts tonight. And it may interest you to know that only a few hours ago, the Senate has passed, by a vote of about 2-1, the Lend-Lease Bill for aid to the democracies of the world that are trying to save their democracy. The farmer, no less than the businessman and the workman, has his eyes turned to the world situation. Democracy over large areas of the old world is threatened with extinction, and no democratic farm program in the United States, nor the democratic way of life here, can hope to survive the death of democracy over the rest of the earth. We cannot escape our collective responsibility for the kind of life that is going to emerge from the ordeal through which the world is passing today. We cannot be an island. We may discharge that responsibility unwisely, but we cannot escape the consequences of our choice. We would have it a world in which we may live in peace, live in freedom, live in security. The kind of world our farmer forefathers dreamed of and worked for as they settled the old Atlantic seaboard and pushed their way into the West. I am confident that the farmers of 1941 want this kind of world to survive.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the President of the United States, now the Vice President of the United States.
A year ago, I spoke on this program as Secretary of Agriculture. And today, my good friend Claude Wickard has that responsibility. But both of us are working for that great American whose leadership is one of our greatest blessings, President Franklin D. Roosevelt. He is the best friend that agriculture has ever had in the White House. 8 years ago, the president called farmers together to draft a program to meet an emergency. We didn't know then that the programs we were building would be a bulwark against the storms which sweep the world of 1941. In 1933, many people felt we would soon be back in our old, safe, familiar world again. Now we know that world has gone. The early farm programs turned out to be only a part of the armor which we will have to wear to live in the world of the 1940s. It is our salvation that we already have forged some of that armor. Our 1933 dream of a return to the pre-war world has gone, perhaps forever. Yet the nation still has certain choices before it. It can and must decide the extent of our aid to democracy. And farmers will help in making that decision. There is no question about farmer sympathies in the world crisis. Farmers founded American democracy, and farmers today, no less than other Americans, cherish democracy, loathe tyrannical aggression, and love peace. Franklin Delano Roosevelt loves peace too. He is working to keep war away from these shores. But refusing to help other democracies does not guarantee peace. At this stage in the world's history, the pacifism of the appeasers is the road to war or to slavery. Preparedness and a strong international policy are the only possible roads to peace and freedom. On the basis of cold self-interest, our farmers have a tremendous stake in the triumph of democracy. Millions of Americans are directly dependent upon our foreign trade. If the Nazis win, there is little future for that trade. The loss of foreign trade would mean the loss of some of our liberties. The way the war goes in Europe probably will settle the question of just how tight future controls for American agriculture will be. Munitions and food for Britain now may well determine for the future how many of their old freedoms will be left to American farmers. The future of some of those freedoms will depend also on our relations with our neighbors in Latin America. I hope the farmers of the United States determine to help make these relations satisfactory. We've got to get along with Latin America if we are going to make our own democracy vital and enduring. We must not let the tragedy of Europe be repeated here. We must not let Nazi triumphs in Europe lead to Nazi control in Latin America. We must not let hatred dominate in the New World as it has in the old. Farmers are as fair-minded as any group in America. They have planned and administered national programs for agriculture. To do this, they had to be above sectional interests. Men big enough to do that are big enough to look at our international problems clearly and sanely. They will be able to vision the United States as a leader in an orderly and prosperous world. The farmers of this country are fortunate in having their national farm programs. They should guard them well. They are fortunate in having Claude Wickard as Secretary of Agriculture. I have known Claude for years. He is an Indiana dirt farmer and a good one. And he has vision enough to want to help tenants and workers as well as farm owners. I know he will make a good lieutenant for Franklin D. Roosevelt in his magnificent efforts to make the world a safe place for freedom, peace, and abundance fairly shared.
That was Vice President Wallace, and now the Secretary of Agriculture, Claude R. Wickard.
8 years ago today, in a time of grave national emergency, a new kind of partnership came into being. Farmers and government teamed up to meet a crisis that neither could cope with alone. And tonight, we realize that once again, we face a grave emergency. Because of this, the anniversary we are observing takes on a new meaning. It becomes not so much a symbol of what we have accomplished, but rather of what we can accomplish. One way to measure what we have accomplished since 1933 is to look back to where we started. 8 years ago, our address was Bankruptcy, USA. All of us lived there, or near there. Yet the situation on March 8, 1933 didn't seem nearly as hopeless as the situation had the previous March. After failing to get help from government, we made some changes. We helped elect a new administration and a new president. That president is still working for us, and he has done more for agriculture than any other man who ever occupied the White House. And as you know, Henry Wallace is still working for us, too. And farmers never had a better friend. Yes, we've gone a long way since March 1933, much further than some of us realize. Franklin Delano Roosevelt gave farmers a seat at the first table. And as a result, we have more than doubled the farm income of 1932. We've established an ever-normal granary. And so far as food is concerned, we are better prepared than any nation on earth. Since 1933, we have begun systematic care of our soil on a national scale. We are feeding our surpluses to the hungry instead of letting them rot on boxcar sidings or in the fields. We have had and are grateful for the cooperation of many businessmen in these surplus programs. I could mention many other farm programs undertaken during the past few years. But to my way of thinking, Other things are more significant than the mere existence of the programs, valuable as they may be. American farmers have proved their ability to work together in national programs for agriculture. Some people used to say farmers just wouldn't pull together. They were wrong, just as these people who say democracy can't compete with dictatorship are wrong. We built these programs in a time of stress and storm. Now another storm is upon us. And if farmers didn't have their program, they would be as helpless as they were in 1932. But now, the programs are protecting farmers and consumers, too. Whatever the future brings, this country will not lack for food and fiber. If England needs food, as England will, farmers can supply that, too. Furthermore, they can fill all our needs without plowing up the hills and plains and sowing the seed for a future crop of dust storms. All that the farmers ask in return is a fair price for their products and a fair income from their labor. I know that the president and vice president want agriculture to have equality with other groups. They have proved that many times. And let me assure President Roosevelt that the overwhelming majority of farmers are behind his efforts to defend democracy. American farmers have never goose-stepped. And they never will. They are ready to do whatever becomes necessary to protect our way of life.
This talk by the Secretary of Agriculture, Claude R. Wickard, concludes a broadcast in observance of the second annual National Farm Day from the White House in Washington, D.C. Earlier in this broadcast, President Franklin D. Roosevelt and Vice President Henry A. Wallace addressed not only the regular radio audience, but especially an audience of 2 million farm people who had gathered in 6,000 meetings to celebrate this anniversary. John Charles Daly speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.